Hello, welcome back to this Microsoft Virtual Academy all about hybrid IT management, specifically focusing in on automation. I'm still Matt McSpirit, and as part of the course, we've covered a huge amount of things already, from building workflows, PowerShell workflows, PowerShell authoring in the gallery, visually as well. We've looked at how you get started, how you use the gallery to import modules and runbooks and so on, a whole host of stuff. And if you haven't watched any of those modules already, what are you doing? You need to go back and watch those because they're incredibly important. But now we're going to change direction slightly and introduce a topic that should be incredibly important to you as you embark on your automation journey. And that's around desired state configuration. So I've brought along Joe to help us understand just what we need to know for DSC. Joe, tell us what you do at Microsoft.
Sure. So my name is Joe Levy. I'm a program manager on the operations management suite. I've been at Microsoft for about 4 years now. I started by working on System Center Orchestrator, which is process automation for your data center and your IT within the firewall. Then worked on Azure Automation, which is process automation for your Azure resources. And now I work on automation in the Operations Management Suite, which is process and desired state configuration automation for all of your resources in the cloud, on-premise, Windows and Linux, wherever they may be, managing them at scale easily with automation.
Nice. And people can get in touch with you on Twitter. You've got your Twitter handle there. And also you've done the circuit around the various speaking events, the TechEd Ignite. So I guess a lot of your sessions will be recorded on Channel 9
as well. All around. Yeah.
Nice. Very cool. So help us understand what we're trying to solve for with desired state configuration. Why is this so important?
Sure. So essentially the problem we're trying to solve here is keeping the thousands of servers running my services configured correctly is incredibly complicated and error prone, right? If you have a giant infrastructure deployment of systems on-premise and different clouds, you know, thousands of machines at scale, doing configuration management across all of them can be really hard. And the reason for that is because, in addition to the fact that there's many servers and they have some state, that some configuration you want to keep them in, they also, that's different in different roles. So you might have web servers, you might have database tiers, worker tiers. So there's configuration specific to certain roles where every machine in the role should have the same configuration. There's configuration that all of your machines should have in addition to that specific role configuration. And sometimes there's, you know, server specific configuration as well. So managing all the different configurations for all the different machines, especially when you're talking about a live company where there's lots of people and processes that have access to these machines and may accidentally, or because they think they're doing the right thing, go and make changes and take the service out of the desired state in terms of a state where it is able to best run the services those machines are set up for, or in a way where you're kind of following the compliance requirements of your country or your organization.
Yeah, so you have an optimal configuration that you're looking for, and occasionally things can drift, maybe, like you say, human intervention or I guess otherwise, but you want to keep it in that optimal state as much as you can.
Exactly, right. Exactly. And different people are responsible for different parts of the configuration. Configuration needs change over time. Machines, you know, you're usually kind of scaling up over time, so there's more and more machines to manage, and how do you make sure those machines match the earlier configuration you've set up on other machines? So it's a big problem when you're talking about huge scale of machines.
Yeah, and not achievable if you're just using essentially GUI tools.
Right,
It makes it a lot more difficult.
Too long. If you want to sleep every night, I wouldn't recommend using GUI tools when you have thousands of machines to
there
manage.
There you go. You heard it here first. You sound very much like Mr. Snover. He's very into that. So I guess, do you want to, we've talked through the problem and help you understand just exactly what challenges, and I'm sure it's something that you guys are facing at home as well, and not specifically at home, at work perhaps more so. How can we start to solve it?
Sure. So the first thing I want to dive into is kind of, you've seen the automation service and a lot of process automation today on how you can run scripts in our service. What I'd like to do is show how you do configuration management using those scripts. And it does work. It is great. It's a lot better than manual. But later we'll talk about the even better way to do it with these desired state configuration type tools.
Cool.
So I'd like to dive right into that demo.
Go for it, yeah.
All right. So I've got here my Azure, my OMS automation account. By the way, this automation service is part of the operations management suite, and it's also a standalone service you can use as Azure as well. So that's why you'll hear automation in both ways. It's the same product. It's just kind of, you can use it as part of the management suite or as a standalone service, depending on your needs.
Cool.
So I have my automation account here, and I've written this script right here called set Windows IT rules. And what it does is it takes in a VM connection string and a VM credential, asset name, which it grabs from our automation asset store, which I'm sure earlier sessions covered.
Yep.
And then what it's going to do is actually, let me actually kick this off and then we'll talk about it while it's running. So I've imported this script, because we can run scripts in automation, as a runbook into here. And I'm actually just going to kick this off. So I'll hit start, and then I will provide the parameters for a specific machine I've set up that is not following the configuration that I've said it needs to follow. And we'll talk about what that is in a second.
So this one's perhaps drifted out of optimal configuration, or somebody's tweaked it.
Right. Okay. So if I go back to the script that I've written, you can see I have a script in here. It's about 55 lines. And what it's doing is it's taking in a VM to connect to. It's WinRM remoting into that VM. And in this case, the desired state I'm trying to make sure is there is that the Operations Management Suite agent is there. And that's really important, because the Operations Management Suite lets you do all kind of management and gain all kinds of insights into your machines, regardless of where they're running, in the cloud, on-prem, Windows, Linux, et cetera.
Yeah.
So having that MMA agent there and running is very important. So it checks for that. This machine actually doesn't have the MMA agent installed.
Right.
So was configured will return false. And then you'll see down here, if it sees that it's not configured, the next thing it does is actually go and auto-correct that behavior, right? Because we want to put it back into the desired state, the correct state for this machine to be in, having the MMA agent installed and running.
Nice.
I've actually just commented out the install step for that, so I can rerun this demo, but this would be the line to do it for the MMA agent.
Right, so it would actually go ahead and install the agent using essentially a silent install.
Mm-hmm.
Right, nice.
And then the next thing it does is I want some reporting on the fact that my machine is not matching the desired state. So it's going to actually send an email and it's going to invoke in line another runbook to actually send that email.
Right.
So one runbook calling another, the email logic in here, all the configuration logic in this top level set Windows IT rules runbook.
Right, nice.
So if I actually go and check on this runbook, you can see it's completed. If I go to output, I can see it was not following the IT rules. Autocorrect succeeded, which it would have if I did the install.
Yeah.
And then it sent an email to me to say, hey, something was not following the right state. You probably want to be notified that things weren't in compliance with your desired state.
Right.
So here's an example of just the email I got earlier when I sent this. It's just telling me, hey, your machine's not following the rules. So that way I could talk to people responsible for the machine, go and figure out what happened maybe if I want to, or at least just know, hey, some auto correction took place.
Right, and we learned in earlier modules that you can do things like scheduling. So I could have this run on a daily basis or?
That was exactly the next thing I was gonna show. You wouldn't wanna run this once, and you don't wanna have to put in the parameters like I did from a file every time you run it.
Right.
So you'd go to schedule, and then you'd actually hook it up to a newer existing schedule. So if I wanted to run it daily, I could create a new schedule or select this existing one. And then I have this runbook running every day with my parameters already defined on what machines it should check to make sure that the machines are matching the desired state, using this imperative kind of, here's the first step, here's the second step, here's the third step process runbook to do all the checking of if it's in the desired state, reporting to me if it's not, and auto-correction.
So you only get the report in this case if it's not. If everything is fine, if it's got the agent already, you wouldn't receive anything.
Yeah, but I mean, it's all up to what you implement in the runbook. You could have it send a different email to say, hey, everything's all good.
Yeah, you're amazing.
You just may end up getting, hopefully, a lot of emails saying, hey, everything's all good, right?
Nice.
So that's how it would work with runbooks today.
Right.
But there's some problems with that I'd kind of like to talk through. It's a lot better than manual, right?
Absolutely.
Because if thousands of machines, I'm not going to manually go and check every day to make sure in the desired state, it just won't scale. Mm. And I want to do that because I want to prevent the problems from happening. I don't want to only react to issues once they've happened, because that can affect my uptime, can affect my, if auditors come around and I'm not showing 100% compliance all the time, it can look bad. So some of the downsides, it's great to do this with a runbook over manual, but some of the downsides of that are that I actually had to write a whole process, step 1 through 10, to just say, here's my desired state. I want to make sure this desired state is enforced, right? Mm. Essentially, I should just be able to declare, hey, here's what I want, and let the underlying system take care of making it so and reporting to me through some standard interface on whether it is or isn't matching that state. I had to write the test, the set, and the report logic. Instead of just writing this is what I want and the testing of that, the setting of that, and the reporting of that to being taken care of by kind of the underlying management system.
Right.
Not to mention this was all over WinRM, so it meant I had to actually open a port into my machine, give automation a credential to access my machine, which I'd rather not have to do, right? Because you want to, if you don't have to open ports or open firewall rules, you don't want to have to do that. The thing I wrote you know, that script I showed you, the 55-line script, you can't immediately tell what it's doing just by looking at it, right? You have to basically understand PowerShell, understand the process and each step of the process to really know what it's doing.
Yeah.
So all these things, and the fact that I had to schedule it, right?
Yeah.
So it's not just I have the script and it just works. I have to put that on a schedule so that it executes every day rather than just saying this is the desired state, make sure that state stays in place.
You know, so there are some downsides, but like you say, it is still a stronger solution than manual.
Definitely, way better than manual. And you know, for a lot of people, that's the first step. You know, that's where they go to first. Mm. They do it as a runbook, and that is a great way to do it. It's just there's always a better way to do it, right? And that's what I want to talk about, is the kind of the best way you can do this.
Cool. So you've set yourself up now. So what is the best way to do this?
Ta-da! The best way to do this: PowerShell desired state configuration. Right. So what PowerShell DSC is basically a way for you to declare exactly what that state you want to match is, and say, make it so.
Right.
And you either push to certain machines to say, here's the desired state, stay in this state, or at least alert me if you go out of the state, if you don't want auto-correction.
Yeah.
It's much more readable because it's just a declaration of what you want in a PowerShell file. And then you can take that file, put it in source control, diff that file over time to see, hey, how has my configuration of my machines changed over time? And by looking at every kind of commit to your source control, you can see exactly who made what changes when. And you can do things like code review on your machine configuration before you actually push out, you know, your configuration to production.
Right.
Other people can look at it as opposed to just an IT admin saying, hey, I think I want to update this config, asking their friend. There's no kind of trail and there's no kind of formal review process to make sure exactly what I said I was going to do is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So in terms of kind of what this looks like, if you look at the top here, the structural configuration, you can see it's much nicer about, I want to ensure that a certain Windows feature is present. And I can still parameterize that, right, if I want to. Or in this case, ensure that this website is present on the box. Versus having to write code that not just checks whether it's there, sets it to be there, does some reporting to me, and has to be idempotent in that if it needs to make sure it doesn't try to set it up if it's already set up, because then you could end up with a lot of websites on the box, or you could end up with an error when it tries to set up something that's already set up, right?
Right.
So this first way, just declaring exactly what I want, is much nicer. And if we look at that exact same desired state I wanted to enforce, this is what it looks like as a PowerShell desired state configuration file. You can see it's very easy to read. I'm just saying, I want to have a service running.
And you've given it the name OI service, or is that something that's specific?
So you get to define what goes here. That's kind of your essentially friendly name identifier for this rule.
Okay.
So in this case, I'm saying I want the health service, which I guess is what the MMA service is.
That is the actual name of the agent.
Is running. And then I'm saying before I do this, I need to make sure that the package is there, right? And so the package one down here is just saying ensure that this package that contains the MMA bits is actually on the box, right? And it's giving the details on how to check that it's there, install it if it isn't there, but in a declarative way, ensure that this package is present. This is saying ensure I down, oh, so this is actually installing the package.
Yeah.
So ensure the package is installed. This is the one that actually goes and makes sure the package is, the kind of MSI is there beforehand. So ensure that the bits are on the box, ensure that the package is installed, and ensure that the service is running. So I can very easily declare, hey, this is the state I want it to be in. Make the MMA agent be there, make it running, make it so.
Yeah, seems almost too easy.
Very easy.
Yeah.
And in terms of what the life cycle these items looks like, you have that configuration file that I just showed. Here's another sample one where it's essentially just saying make sure IIS is present on the box and make sure ASP.NET is present. So a very simple one. But regardless of what it is, you take that configuration, you run one simple command to compile it into these managed object format files that the machines actually understand. And then you either push those files to the machines that should match that desired state, or you put those files on what's called a DSC pull server. And what that is a way for, you don't have to have any inbound access to these machines set up. The machines will be configured to reach out to you to say, hey, is there some configuration I should match?
Right.
And it'll actually reach out to you. So it doesn't need any inbound ports or access. It just reaches out to the pull server to pull down what it needs.
So for instance, if you had your example before where you had your 1,000 servers that were manually configured essentially, and we looked at the first solution where you could configure it using PowerShell. Now we're looking at DSC. You've essentially got your 1,000 servers talking to this one, or I suppose a few, perhaps for redundancy, pull nodes, would that be correct? And then they would say, you'd have already configured them to ask the pull node on a frequency.
Yep.
And then say, am I still current? If not, update me, for instance.
Exactly.
Right.
What configuration should I match? It'll check every 30 minutes so that if you did change the configuration for a set of machines, it'll, without you having to remote into any machines, when you're talking about 1,000 machines, that's a lot to remote into and open ports on. They'll just check in every once in a while and say, hey, what configuration should I match? Then they'll make sure they're matching it or report to you if you don't want autocorrection. They'll just report to you in exactly what ways they're not matching it.
Right. And I guess 1,000 servers all reporting back to one server seems like it could be a lot of network traffic, but I'm guessing it's fairly minimal. It's just a tiny piece of information.
Yeah, there's very little going over the wire.
Right.
I'm sorry. It's not a very heavy load. It's just saying it's a ping every like 30 minutes to say, hey, is there something new for me to do? Mm-hmm. And then if there is, the MOF is sent down, but the MOFs aren't really huge.
Right.
And another thing, and we'll kind of get to this, is if you are worried about, like you mentioned, how do I take care of redundancy and high availability for my DSC pull server? So if my single box that I'm using goes down, I don't lose my ability to manage my data center or my clouds. That's where kind of this automation DSC service comes in, which is even better than PowerShell DSC itself.
Right. So we're really building up to good, better, best, ultimate.
The ultimate, platinum. Ultimate edition.
Right, yes. Nice, yeah. Cool, okay.
Configuration so, ultimate.
So we can do roles, we can do features, because I noticed on the previous slide when we had the configuration of SharePoint, it's installing IIS. The role, ASP.NET, is a sub-feature or a sub-role of IIS. It can do the individual packages. I mean, it just seems like it can do everything.
It can do a whole bunch of things. Files, registry, Windows features, services, packages being installed. It can do things for Linux as well. PowerShell DSC is cross-platform, and the whole platform is extensible. So just like you can write PowerShell modules with new commandlets to call in your scripts, you can, in your PowerShell modules, create new DSC resources that take care of the details of... So Windows feature, for example, is a DSC resource, and they've taken care of, okay, assuming I have these parameters set up for me, it should be present, and here's the name of the feature to make sure it's there. It takes care of the making sure the item is there. If it's not there, you know, saying a false to know you're not matching the desired state in this exact way. So all you have to worry about is declaring the state you want, and the resource kind of takes care of that imperative process of how do I make sure it's matching whatever state
it maps
was passed
to. So for instance, web server, DSC on the whole has an understanding that web server is the role of IIS. Because you called it IIS, but you could have, I guess, could have called it something different. Is that right? On the previous slide?
Yeah, IIS, that name right here is totally your choice as to what you put there.
But web server is the important, meaningful, that is actually the IIS.
Yeah, this is the kind of in-code name. Regardless of whether you're using DSC or PowerShell commandlets, that's the in-code name for what IIS is, the IIS Windows feature is
so
called.
So if it was Hyper-V, it would be Hyper-V.
Right.
If it was,
ASP.NET, right, there's that one.
Great. So where do we go from here? So we understand the lifecycle a little bit more. You're going to show us some other stuff?
Well, I wanted to show you guys a sample of what DSC actually looks like to start with.
Nice.
So let's go and do that. So I have this box set up here. You can see I have this configuration that I've written on this box. It's not actually applied yet, but it's just saying make sure IIS is present, right? We're used to seeing that, and make sure these two files are present and have this contents in them, right?
Nice. Okay.
So then what I can do is actually, like I said, you have the configuration, you compile it, and then you push it or have it pulled from a pull server.
So how do you compile it? Just out of a quick question, where would you go? Do you do that in IIS as well? Or?
Yes, so you can do that in the IIS or in the regular PowerShell console. I mean, this is saved into a PS1 file.
Right.
So when I run this file, that's actually going to declare simple push config as a configuration. And then down here, I just type in simple push config, and that'll actually do the compilation.
All right.
And you can see that spit out a folder on our desktop called simple push config. And inside that folder is the MOF file, which will be called localhost in this case.
Right.
Let me open that up. And in this MOF file is kind of the machine understandable language of, hey, what's the state I should match? It's kind of like there's
like the
C# file and there's a DLL file, right?
Okay, nice.
So that's that file right there. So in my next step after doing that compilation, creating these MOF config documents, is to actually apply it. And I can do that with a command called start DSC configuration. And so I've kind of preset up that command, and I'll run it now. And you'll see what this is going to do is actually say, apply this configuration to this machine. And when we're done, the machine is going to have IIS installed, and it's going to have these two files present. And Let me show you that these files actually don't exist right now. So you can see those two files that should be in the C directory are not there right now, right? And if I actually run this, in this case, I've been running this demo so many times in a row, I need to force it. This will actually put those files in place and make sure IIS is installed.
Right.
So this should only take a second to run because it's not doing too much here, and then I'll have that desired state configured for the server. And I could go take this and run it on as many servers as I want, just declare the desired state, and it's all set up.
Well, you've used files as an example here, but you could have been tweaking the registry, like you said, installing additional roles.
Yeah, anything you want. There's a PowerShell gallery, which is kind of community content and Microsoft contributed content that doesn't ship in box for tons of other resources. Besides the many that exist in the box. So now if I go to my local C drive, boom, you can see those two files are there. Mm-hmm. It's matching that desired state, and these files do have the content that they're supposed to have.
Okay.
So that's PowerShell DSC.
It's a good way to ensure that, like you say, files or a certain package or a certain just something exists on the system all the time. It could be useful.
Yeah. The state that these machines should match, it gets deployed and it stays that way.
Nice. Okay, so what else do we need to know in terms of PowerShell DSC?
Sure, so that's PowerShell DSC, but again, we've been talking about better and better ways to do this. So there's manual, there's running this as a script, which is better, which I showed, and then there's PowerShell DSC, which is better, and now we're going to talk about the best, which is automation DSC.
Nice. Built it up now.
Exactly. So PowerShell DSC does a great job of making configuration management really easy for your machines, but it also introduces some items you now need to manage. There's the configuration files, which you have many of, there's these MOF files, which you have many of, and there's thousands of machines that you need to either push or set up to talk to our pull server to actually pull down these configs and report to, right? And so when we're talking about thousands and thousands of machines, that ends up being a lot of configurations, a lot of MOFs, and a lot of kind of either pushing or pulling machines that need to be set up to use DSC. So some of the kind of things that DSC itself doesn't take care of is limiting access, tracking change, and orchestrating configuration changes. So limiting access is things like making sure only people who should change certain parts of configurations do change those parts of the configurations.
Right.
It's things like making sure a node that's reaching out to the pull server isn't able to pull down a configuration that's not assigned to it. So for example, if I have some lowly web server and I have an AD configuration on my pull server, I don't want my lowly web server, if it might get hacked, to be able to pull down my full AD configuration, which might expose some other information, right?
Mm.
So that kind of being able to limit access both to people and to what the nodes, what configuration the nodes can pull.
Yeah.
In terms of tracking changes compliance, how do I actually tell who made what changes to configurations when? How do I tell across my whole environment what machines are actually compliant with their desired state and in exactly what ways? And in terms of orchestrating configuration change, upgrade domains are very important when you're talking about deploying changes out. So how do I make sure I only apply my configuration on a per upgrade domain basis and only move on to the next upgrade domain once the last one is done? Or I might have dependencies like the database tier needs to be updated before the web service tier, right?
Mm.
So I need to make sure my new configuration goes out to the database tier before the web service tier, as well as respecting maintenance windows, right? Maybe I only want the new config to be pulled by machines when the machine is in a maintenance window because I don't want it going auto-correcting, which may temporarily take it down, maybe requires a machine restart while it's not in maintenance mode or in a maintenance window.
That makes sense. Well, there's a lot of things that I thought it was going all so well for PowerShell DSC, and now you've mentioned all those things, you think, oh, actually, yeah, I didn't think about those. So how do we solve those?
So we solve that with the Automation DSC service, which is this great service that ships as part of Operations Management Suite, where, again, you take those configurations, you compile them in our service, you import any DSC resources you want, if you want ones beyond what's shipped in the box, and then you onboard machines and say, hey, these set of machines are assigned these MOFs, these node configurations, and they will just reach up to our service, which you don't have to stand up. You know, it's not like setting up a local pull server. Instead, you just click new automation account, and boom, you have a pull server set up.
Right.
And it scales to whatever needs you have. So as the more machines that kind of check that start being onboarded to it, it'll just scale to meet the exact needs you have. It's highly available and highly reliable, so you're not worried about one box going down and then suddenly you can't control configuration in your environment or see what machines are compliant. So it's this really good at-scale production configuration management service.
Right, and it's not just, obviously, your graphic with the cloud and with the endpoints that you can target there. There's Azure VM, physical server, on-prem VM. It could be Windows or Linux. I'm guessing it doesn't have to be an Azure VM. Could it be a VM in another cloud?
Just like the rest of the operations management suite, all of the services, including this automation DSC service, can target Windows, can target Linux, can target on-premise VMs, OpenStack, Azure, AWS, you know, anything else.
Right.
Wherever these machines are.
As long as it can reach it.
They can be managed.
Cool, nice.
In one interface.
Nice. So have we got a demo of this one?
We do have a demo.
Great.
Let's go to that demo.
Awesome.
So I'll go back to my automation portal where I ran that runbook way back in my first demo. And you can see I've written this configuration here. And this configuration, it's would produce two of these MOF files, two different roles essentially. One is saying, make sure IIS is there, make sure these two files are there, and that the content of the files is there. The other one, very similar, except the files are blank, right? So I can actually go and import this into the automation service by just going to configurations, add configuration, and then I would select it, which I'm not going to navigate to, and hit import. I've actually already done that, so here it is sitting right there. And the next thing I would do is, just like I showed compiling locally, you would compile it in the service. So I'll hit compile, and that'll actually kick off a job to do that compilation, the production of the MOFs. And you can see, I'll show you an example of a completed job already, but once it's done, it spits out those two MOF files that we have locally, and the MOFs that get spit out are according to what you name your configuration, that's kind of the namespace, and then whatever you define here are kind of the names of the roles, the names of these MOF node configurations,
so the
we call them.
Independent node configurations.
Yeah, so web server and web server blank files, and you can see web server blank files. So in a compilation job, you can actually look at if there was an error creating, compiling it into MOFs, or whatever output or warnings, or exactly what source was used for this compilation, since the configuration gets compiled into the MOFs, and the MOFs are actually what gets assigned to the nodes.
Right.
So let's see how this job is doing.
Is there any reason why you wouldn't create a ginormous configuration file with all lots and lots of nodes? Because obviously you've got two in that particular example that you had. Could you not just create one massive one that has everything?
You could. I mean, you could do the same thing with a script, right? And it kind of gets unmanageable over time the
more content
you have in one file and the more people who need to make edits to that file.
Yep.
So modularizing it by file where each configuration kind of maps to one service maybe or one set of roles that kind of are related, like SharePoint might be the configuration, and in there you might have a node statement, a role for web service and worker and database tier, right? The different roles within that service.
I see. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I was just thinking, could you just have one behemoth? But
you could. Wouldn't advise it.
On the right direction.
Yeah. You can see this is running now, so it's about to complete because the compilation doesn't actually take very long.
Quite small.
Should be done. There we go. It's completed.
Right.
And you can see these MOFs, these node configurations were produced.
Yep.
And then if I actually go to my nodes, I actually had one machine already assigned to one of the node configurations MOFs that comes out of there.
Okay.
And if I hit refresh there, you can see, so it would be pending, which would mean there's something new on the pull server you need to pull, but you haven't pulled it yet. This machine actually happened to just check the pull server right after that, so it's in progress mode.
Right.
So if I actually go to that machine.
So just to clarify for people and myself, a node that you've got listed there is one that is actively asking for configuration optimization.
Yeah, a node is essentially just a managed endpoint that's pulling configuration from the service.
Great, okay.
So you can see it's pulling down the new MOF. Since I imported the configuration, I compiled it. There might be some new config in the latest version of that configuration that the server is now pulling down. So if I go to that server and I actually force it to pull, you'll see afterwards it will be matching the desired state. It looks like it had already just pulled just because we happened to hit that 30-minute interval.
Yeah.
So I didn't even need to force it in this case.
Okay.
And of course, that desired state said, make sure IIS is there and make sure those two files are there and are blank. So you can see, boom, IIS is there.
Yep.
And we have these two files here and they're blank.
Nice.
Right. So boom, that desired state is there. But we also talked about how DSC and automation DSC help solve configuration drift.
Right.
So in addition to pulling config from the server, from the pull server, it'll also continually every 15 minutes run and make sure that the state is enforced, because when I configured this machine to pull from our pull server, I said autocorrect. Make sure you're in autocorrect mode.
Right.
If anything ever changes from the desired state, set it back. You don't have to do that. You can just set it to report what ways it's not compliant. But in this case, it would set it back. So if I delete one of these files, and
could
again,
could it be a delete, or could you change that file.
You could change the content in it. If it was a service, you might set it to stopped where the config, the desired state says to have it running. Just some change versus the desired state.
Right.
And then I'll kick off. This will happen every 15 minutes, but I'll force a consistency check to happen now, which will say, hey, you're not matching the desired state anymore. I'm going to put you back into the desired state.
So a force of a consistency check is different from, would force pull have the same effect, though, essentially, if we'd have run that again?
So what force pull does is it's checking the pull server to say, hey, is there any new desired state versus the desired state I had before that I should match?
Right.
Versus a consistency check is kind of independent, and that's saying, of the desired state I last pulled, is the machine matching this?
Gotcha. Continue, so you would use both continuously one, right, okay.
Yeah, so now if I go back here, boom, the file I deleted is back there, so it's continually matching this desired state without me having to go and do anything.
That's awesome.
And if we go back to our pull server, you can see, if I refresh this, the machine is now compliant because we know it's matching the desired state in all the ways. And I can see this status is very useful for determining, are my machines matching the state they should be in? You can see in this case, this one is not, this one tried to, it was in autocorrect mode but failed to.
Right.
And we'll dig into that in a second. So if I click into here, you can see, boom, it's exactly compliant with the state, the desired state I said it should be compliant with.
So it lists those individual components of our of the MOF that we provided before.
At the resource level and the resource instance level. So for example here, this one you can see did have the Windows features it needed, but something was not compliant about the files that were supposed to be there. And if I click into file, I can see exactly this file, you know, this is the friendly name I gave the file, is not compliant versus this one was. So I can see in exactly what ways are my machines not aligning to the desired state that they should be in.
And that one didn't have autocorrect, so obviously autocorrect.
That one was just reporting.
Yeah.
This other machine does have autocorrect, so when it saw it wasn't matching the state, it tried to match the state, but you can see that failed. And if we click into the specific resource, we can see exactly why it failed. And in this case, it's because the requested feature, Weeb server, is not found on the target machine, which makes sense because there's no Windows feature called Weeb server, so that failed. So troubleshooting
maybe in the future,
without digging
in. The future.
One day.
We'll we can request that on user voice.
But then my demo will break. So
That one will be fixed.
That'll be fixed, but my demo, I won't have a failed note.
Yeah.
So one more thing I wanted to show is, let's say the desired state for this machine changes. I no longer want it to have blank files. I want it to have IIS and files with content in them. I can easily, and all this you can do through APIs, commandlets, SDKs, as well as the portal.
Right.
I can go in and say, assign the node. And I can assign it to, instead of web server blank files, the node configuration it's assigned to right now, I can assign it to web server, which is the one that has, if we go back to the ISC,
the populated file,
that's the one, right, that has the files populated.
Right.
And so, boom, it is now done. That one's now assigned to it.
Yeah.
You can see it's in pending state because there's something new on the pull server, some new configuration the machine hasn't pulled yet, so we can tell that in the portal. And if I go back to that machine and do that force pull, again, so make it grab this new config now instead of at its regular interval of grabbing it. We'll see that once this is done, it'll say, oh, there's a new desired state for me to assume. It's different than how I was configured right now. I'm going to match that new state, which in this case means no change to IIS since that was already set up.
Yeah.
But the files that were blank will no longer be blank.
What if you have clicked the force consistency there instead of the force pull? What would it have done?
If I had clicked that first?
So we came into this environment. We've reassigned the alternative config to this particular node. Mm-hmm. You came here. You ran force pull to grab the latest. But if you'd have run consistency, what would have happened?
Right. So the consistency will, all the consistency does is check against whatever had been pulled last.
Yep.
So in this case, it would still be web server blank files because the last pull pulled that down.
Okay.
So the consistency check will continually check against that.
Right.
Independently, there's another timer which is for the pull, right? Mm. Which is when it actually goes out and it pulls down potentially new desired states. So one is, are there new desired states for me to assume? And the other one is, for the desired state I should assume, am I actually matching it? And if not, I'm going to report or I'm going to autocorrect.
And now that you've pulled down the latest, the consistency check will continue to check against that one.
Exactly. Every 15 minutes it'll go and it'll make sure, because this is an autocorrect mode, that the machine is continually matching my desired state, whatever it may be.
So it's 15 minutes for consistency and it's, did you say 30 minutes for... checking the pull every 30 minutes?
So the pull happens every 30 minutes organically.
Right.
The consistency check happens every 15 minutes. These are configurable.
Okay.
The lowest is around, I think, 15 minutes for each, but the defaults are 15 and 30, as I mentioned.
Right.
We're also working on kind of lowering those, so there's even less of a need to, in a mission critical sense, ever have to go and onto the machine and say, hey, I need you to pull now, or hey, I need you to consistency check now. So really getting those times more granular.
Cool.
And you can see, boom, that desired state is there. The file is no longer blank. It is now has the contents it should have.
Nice.
And that is automation, desired state configuration in the operations management suite.
It's a whirlwind. It's what you appreciate from this when you're coming at it from perhaps somebody who hasn't been as engaged in automation over time, or your idea of automation is very strict scripts that are very tied to very specific machines that have evolved over time, and someone's left the company and now that script, nobody knows how to work it.
Right.
That kind of automation world. This is just a completely different world, but hopefully you appreciate what Joe's given us here is like a good, yeah, you can do some powerful stuff with PowerShell, and then you can start to introduce DSC, and that's better because of the way we can start to configure a lot of systems in one go and maintain, but it's slightly more difficult to manage than what we would get in the best option, which is the automation service.
Exactly.
So, yeah, cool stuff. Hopefully you found that useful. I find it incredibly useful, and there's loads of other resources that you've done as well. There's some other stuff on MVA, and we'll get the links as well for the things you've done in Build and Ignite, or you can search the Channel 9 website for Joe. You'll find loads of content there where we've got more time. He's got more time to go through lots more of this stuff as well.
Sure.
But hopefully you found that useful, and we'll continue this series as we continue our look at all the things automation and the ops management suite. And stay with us. Thank you.